Let's Talk with Anna Glavinsky.
We really have a guest online who is going to be such a privilege to be able to hear the stories that he's got to tell. It's something that perhaps people have been waiting for a long time and will be really curious about. And I'm really delighted to welcome Paul Burrell on the line, who's talking about his new book, The Royal Insider. Good morning, Paul. How are you?
Good morning, Anna. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. Like I say, really, really excited to speak to you because you sort of purposely have got stories that you've not been talking about for a long time, which have come out in your brand new book. So tell us about the launch of this book, why it's come out now.
Well, I've thought about my world for a long time, especially since we lost our dear late Queen. And a lot of people out there don't realize the fact that I started my royal service with Her Majesty at Buckingham Palace when I was just 18 years old. And most people know me as Diana's confidant and working for the princess, but they don't know about my life with the Queen. So I thought it's now time to write my full story of my full service. And a lot's happened to me too. I mean, I've just come through cancer and I wanted to try and help people through that journey. So I think it's appropriate to talk about that life, which is the royal life, which is changing so rapidly. They're in a particular crisis at the moment. And I want it to survive because I'm a monarchist. And I want to cross that bridge and I want to find King William and Queen Catherine at the other side. So this book is about my special memories about the Queen, about Princess Diana, about behind the scenes, because I had a front row seat to history. And I think it's important to tell people this is my story. It's not their story. It's just that they were there and they inspired me. And so I'm telling you why they were so inspirational.
Wow, I mean, it sounds very positive, you know, using words like inspirational there. But what I'm really curious about is, like you said, you started at 18 and you went into this, you know, from the outside, to be honest, a mad world.
The book tells you my journey from a coal mining village in the north of England, a coal miner's son, ending up at Buckingham Palace. How bizarre is that? I walked into a theatrical pantomime world, and that's what I tell you about. I went from a black and white world into a world of technicolor and witnessed things that no ordinary lad should ever witness. But along the way, you know, I'm an ordinary man. I've just been thrown into extraordinary circumstances.
And are you able to sort of paint the picture there a little bit? What it actually looks like, these technicolors, for a young lad living in that household day to day? What is it? What's around you?
Well, when I moved into Buckingham Palace, it was a world like Downton.
Yeah.
You've watched Downton.
Yeah.
10 times bigger. Full of liveried staff rushing around doing their jobs, 200 people keeping this royal family afloat. It was a world in itself. You need never move out of those walls of Buckingham Palace. We all lived there. We all ate there. We all had fun there. And that's the world I try to paint in my book. I've tried to show you inside a world which has disappeared now. We lived in a golden age of Elizabeth II, and it was glorious. And I try to paint this picture of traveling around the country to Sandringham, Balmoral, on the Royal Yacht Britannia, and all the fun that we had below stairs. And more importantly, how kind, how generous, and how wonderful our late Queen was. Because who's going to tell you about this? Only the people who worked for her, who looked after her. And there aren't many of us left.
And you say that it's a world that's disappeared. Do you think that's just because of the changing nature of the monarchy? Or do you think, you know, everyone's living in a world, to be fair, that has disappeared. You know, technology has changed our experiences, for, you know, from my grandparents' time to my parents' time, generation on generation. Things are changing fast. Do you think that world that you lived in within the royal household, can we go backwards? What do you see the future looking like?
No, we can't. We can't go backwards, Anna. We only have to go forwards. I lived in this Victorian, Edwardian existence of the past. And King Charles is trying to change it, but he was part of that world too. So it's impossible for him. But across the other side of the bridge, when we get to William and Kate, they will change it because they live in the modern world and they were born in the modern world. Charles wasn't. He was born in his mother's world. So he's really at the end of a long, long line. I think things will change enormously. And you're right, things have to change. The monarchy is only there for as long as the people want them to be there. And there was a recent poll in Britain that said that there was, for the first time, there was dissent in the ranks and people didn't want the royal family. But I do. I think it's good for our country. I think it's good to have a king and queen. And I think it's great soft power. In fact, today, President Trump arrives in Britain for his state visit. What great soft power the royal family is to entertain foreign heads of state, to show them how great Britain is.
And, you know, you're using words like entertainment and fun and soft power. Do you say, is there an importance in the role of the monarchy, do you see, that's not just, you know, light and fluffy and not just, you know, I just played a song by Beyonce there, didn't I? You know, it's entertainment. Queen B.
That might be Harry and Meghan's world, Beyonce and Jay-Z, but the real royal family world, I think it's very important. Would you rather have a president? Or would you rather have King William and Queen Catherine? I think by the time the coronation comes, it comes in peaks and troughs. And I think once William and Kate come to the throne, there'll be an enormous spike in popularity for the royal family. We're all fascinated with William and Kate and their children. We want to see them grow. We want to see them be part of Great Britain. Unfortunately, we can't see Lilibet and Archie grow because they're hidden away in Montecito, but they're no longer part of the royal family. So we have to concentrate on what we have, and what we have, I think, is great.
And the story that you've lived, you know, the part of history that you've lived, you said that we're the royal household is in crisis time now, but you've also been firsthand, like you say, front row tickets, watching other crises. How do they deal with it? On the inside, you know, the breakdown of Charles and Diana's marriage, that sort of thing. Those were big crises that you were living through.
I was part of that, and I write about that in the book. I tell you what happened behind the scenes. It wasn't easy for me to tread that line between Diana and Charles, knowing that there were three people in the marriage, as Diana so famously said. Now, when it came to the crisis of Diana's death, of course, the monarchy was in turmoil because they just didn't know what to do. There was no rule book to refer to about an estranged royal princess, our future queen, dying in a tragic accident in Paris. And then the funeral and everything else, it was just too much. It was overload, not only for the royal family, but for the British public. And that was the crisis point, but the queen handled it beautifully. When she came down from Balmoral, after looking after the children and keeping them safe in her castle, she came down to address the people. That's what the people wanted. The Queen recognized that, and that's what saved that particular crisis.
And for you guys who are inside there, in the thick of it, you know, you're getting messages before the public do, and you're sort of maybe being informed on how to act or what to say. What sort of messages were you getting, and how did you navigate that?
Well, we learn along the way. We learn etiquette and manners, and what to say and what not to say. How to learn how to set the perfect table. How to address a duke, an archbishop, a king, or a queen. So we learn. It's a learning process on our feet. I looked after President Reagan at Windsor Castle. Mr. President, I call him every morning. I looked after the Pope. Your Holiness is how you address the Pope. Your Grace for an archbishop. So we learned all of that. And we used to take bets in the royal household. Down below stairs, we'd say, what color will the queen be wearing today? And have a sweepstake. What color? Well, I knew that her favorite color was turquoise, that beautiful sort of cross between blue and green. And very often I won the sweepstake. But we always knew what the royals were doing. And the art of being a good servant is to know what your royal wants before they've asked for it. So I always tried to be one step ahead.
Okay, so are you really, you know, you're taking your job seriously, the paying attention to the details seriously. There and making sure that everything's running smoothly.
Yes, and you see, our monarch, I always thought she deserved the best, and she got the best because she was our queen, and we all achieved that. But also, I always said to the queen, I will tell you everything that's happening below stairs. I will tell you things that your household won't tell you because they don't want to tell you the bad news. They only want to tell you the good news. So whenever there was a crisis, particularly when Diana died, I went to Buckingham Palace. I had a meeting with the Queen by herself in her room for over an hour and a half. And I debriefed. I told her everything I'd witnessed in Paris when I went to bring the princess home, and what I saw, what I heard, and she debriefed to me too. And at the end of that meeting, she said to me, she looked straight into my eyes and said, "Be careful, Paul. There are forces at work in my country of which even I have no knowledge." And everybody says to me, what did she mean by that? Well, you don't ask the Queen to elaborate on what something she said. You take it on board and you deal with it. And I thought she meant secret services like MI5 and MI6, that there are spies like James Bond. I'm sure there are. And she was telling me that there are people out there that do things that she doesn't always know. Mm. And when I debriefed with her, I said to her, well, I did see shadowy figures in the corridors at the hospital in Paris. And she said, well, they're just keeping an eye on things. It's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. What a strange world to live in. And you also, you know, what I'm interested in there as well is that sort of relationship side, that human connection with someone that we just see as a monarch, as someone untouchable, almost to the point of inhuman, if you know what I'm saying here.
Yes,
but you talk about moments of warmth, but at the same time, you're using words like debrief when you're talking about, you know, tragedy and painful moments. So how did you cross that line between servant professionalism and humanity? And how did she?
Well, with the Queen, it was easy because you knew where you were with her. She would invite you across the line if she wanted you to be there. And if she didn't, you knew where your place was. With Diana, it was totally different. There wasn't a line and our worlds blurred. And the more she needed me to be there, the more I needed to be there. So ours was more of a friendship of similar age. I was only 3 years older than Diana. We became very, very close. And as William said to me, in recent years, he said, we always knew, Harry and I always knew Mummy was safe because she came home to you.
Oh.
And that's very sweet of them to acknowledge that. So that world is a very different world to ours. And I was privileged to be part of it. It's part of my life. And that's why I wanted to write about it. And in recent years, you've seen the Queen depicted on The Crown, for instance, as a dour, very hard, cold woman. She wasn't that character at all. She was warm and friendly and affectionate. She looked after people. And that's the picture I painted in my book. When I had an accident in America, she picked up the bill. She paid for the surgery. She paid for my transport coming home. She looked after me, and she was to me more like a surrogate mother than a queen. Of course, I always knew that she was my queen. I always gave her that respect. And every morning when she came through her dressing room door, I stood to attention and I bowed and said, "Good morning, Your Majesty."
Yeah.
And she said, "Good morning, Paul. Is there anything fun happening today?" or something like that. So she would break down those formalities in private, but in public, we all knew that she was our queen.
And if we can just go back to picking up what you said there about the princes, William and Harry, saying that they felt confident that their mum was in good hands. But you also talk about your complex relationship with them in your book.
I do. I do talk about that because I'm in conflict sometimes, not with William. William is very straightforward and he's very much like his father and his grandmother. You know where you are with him. With Harry, it's a different thing because I'm always in conflict with Harry. I never know what he's saying is real or not, because sometimes he will say to me things like, we know there are three people in this room, Paul, you, me, and William, who really loved our mother. And I know that. And then in the next breath, he will say, well, you've betrayed our mother by selling her clothes in America. And I'm standing back thinking, no, Harry, you're wrong. I've never said that. That's untrue. And in his court case for the newspapers, this was part of his defense in the courtroom. And I wrote to his solicitors and said, can you tell me about this? Because this is totally untrue. And the solicitors came back eventually and said, we haven't taken any instruction from our client on that matter. But Harry, you said these things without any proof, without any evidence, and you said them and it's wrong. Didn't his grandmother say, our recollections may vary? Well, what she was saying was, I don't recognize sometimes, Harry, what you're saying, because why do you say things which are not true and which do not equate with what I know?
Yeah.
You see, Harry has his truth. I have my truth. But my truth comes from a very solid place, one that I witnessed, I saw, I heard. I don't need to make anything up because the truth actually is stranger than fiction. And this book is totally true, Anna. It's the truth. It's my unadulterated sort of truth, because I've been very raw about myself in this book too, and very honest. And if you're honest and true, you cannot be undermined.
And with the last few minutes there, then let's move on to your story. You know, we've been talking about the people that you've served. Obviously, people are going to be fascinated about that. We can't get away from that. But, you know, you talk about having gone through cancer, which is something so many of us can relate to, yes, whether it's ourselves or people we know and love. So, you know, thank you for talking about it. And also your story of coming out. You know, the stories about you personally in your life.
That was a very tough time for me. I mean, I've battled with demons all through my life, but this particular demon was one of the toughest. And when my marriage ended after 30 years and my two grown-up boys were sat in front of me and I had to say to them, I'm going to marry a man, not easy. Excuse me. Not easy. And I got through it thinking, I'm going to lose my children. But the lesson I learned was, if you're true and honest and you brought up your children well, they'll stay with you. And my two boys said, Dad, we love you. You're our dad. And we want to be on your journey with you. So they are. And even my ex-wife now is part of our enlarged family. She understands me better than anyone. I still love her. She gave me my treasures in life, my two boys. And now I have a grandson. Wow. Life couldn't be better. I'm very, very happy.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Oh, it makes you tear up. It's a really good insight on how great this book is going to be, really, by the sounds of it. And if you don't mind there, are you able to tell us a little bit about your cancer journey and your battle?
Yes.
And thank you.
What I want to say too is, people listening to this now, whether you're a wife or a husband, if you are over 50, please go and see your GP, because I didn't know I had prostate cancer. I didn't know until I had a checkup to go to the jungle yet again. They gave me a thorough checkup and found out my PSA level was high. So go to the doctor. It's only a blood test. Ask them for a PSA test if you're over 50. If you catch it early, you can be fully recovered and you can live to much longer and be a husband and a brother and a grandfather. Please do this because it's so important. And if they do catch it early, it can be eliminated. If you leave it and it's there in 1 in 8 men, if you leave it, it can be fatal. Poor Chris Hoy, he didn't find it until it was very late. And now he has to live with terminal cancer. I want to live a long life, don't you? Don't you want to see your grandchildren grow? And don't you want to live as long as you possibly can? So go and see your GP. Honestly, it's the strongest message I can give you.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Well, we'll wrap it up there now, Paul. Your book is called The Royal Insider. I'd just like to ask, how do you feel now that it's out?
Relieved, because this has been an 18-month journey, and I'm so happy. It's like, you know, I've given birth to this baby, this book. It's gone out into the world now, and it's going to have to look after itself, because, quite frankly, I'm exhausted. And it was a great cathartic experience. I loved writing down my memories of the Queen and Diana and things that I hadn't said before. And at the end of it, I'm proud of it. And I know if you love Diana or the Queen, you will love this book.
Thank you, Paul. Well, congratulations for getting the book out. And what a life. What a life lived.
What a life. What a life. And more to come, let's hope.
Well, watch this space. Paul, thank you for joining us today. Goodbye.
Thank you, Anna. Bye-bye.